I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. Governor Romney aggressively challenged President Obama's four-year record and policies at the first presidential debate last night. The two candidates stood at side-by-side lecterns answering broad-based questions from moderator Jim Lehrer about the economy, taxes, Medicare, Social Security, debt, and the role of the government. It was a wonky debate without any memorable lines. Here's one of the arguments that Mitt Romney made for his candidacy.
My view is that we ought to provide tax relief to people in the middle class, but I'm not going to reduce the share of taxes paid by high-income people. High-income people are doing just fine in this economy. They'll do fine whether you're president or I am. The people who are having the hard time right now are middle-income Americans. Under the president's policies, middle-income Americans have been buried. They're just being crushed. Middle-income Americans have seen their income come down by $4,300. This is a tax in and of itself. I'll call it the economy tax. It's been crushing. At the same time, gasoline prices have doubled under the president. Electric rates are up. Food prices are up. Health care costs have gone up by $2,500 a family. Middle-income families are being crushed. And so the question is how to get them going again. And I've described it. It's energy and trade, the right kind of training programs, balancing our budget, and helping small business. Those are the cornerstones of my plan.
The president criticized Romney's tax plan, saying the numbers don't add up.
Let's talk about taxes because I think it's instructive. Now, 4 years ago when I stood on this stage, I said that I would cut taxes for middle-class families. And that's exactly what I did. We cut taxes for middle-class families by about $3,600. And the reason is because I believe that we do best when the middle class is doing well. And by giving them those tax cuts, they had a little more money in their pocket. And so maybe they can buy a new car. They are certainly in a better position to weather the extraordinary recession that we went through. They can buy a computer for their kid who's going off to college, which means they're spending more money, businesses have more customers, businesses make more profits, and then hire more workers. Now, Governor Romney's proposal that he's been promoting for 18 months calls for a $5 trillion tax cut on top of $2 trillion of additional spending for our military. And he is saying that he is going to pay for it by closing loopholes and deductions. The problem is that he's been asked over 100 times how you would close those deductions and loopholes, and he hasn't been able to identify them, but I'm going to make an important
point. As I said, it was a wonky debate. There is, though, a deep philosophical divide between Mr. Obama and Mr. Romney about the role of government. The president believes it can be a force for good, while Romney says it needs to get out of the way so business can get people back to work. Well, like many people this morning, we are deconstructing last night's debate. And joining us by telephone is Mike Castle, former congressman from Delaware. In fact, represented Delaware for 9 terms. He also served as governor of Delaware from 1985 to 1992. He was lieutenant governor, deputy attorney general, state senator in Delaware as well. And he's currently a partner with DLA Piper. And Mike Castle, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good, Marty. It's good to be with you. It should be fun.
It should be fun indeed. And also with us is Mark Nevins. He's a Philadelphia-based media and communications consultant. In 2008, he served as the Pennsylvania Communications Director for the Hillary Clinton for President campaign. He also was Communications Director for the Kerry Edwards campaign in Pennsylvania. He's worked as a communications strategist for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Mark Nevins, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be here.
Nice long introduction. There's been a lot of back and forth, Mike Castle, about whether President Obama won last night, whether Governor Romney won last night. Let me ask you about the public. Did the public win last night?
You know, I think so. I mean, I know both of these gentlemen not well, but I know them a little bit, and I think they're both impressive individuals with impressive backgrounds and resumes, and I think that was evidenced last night. I believe that most people were surprised at how good Governor Romney was in the debate format, and I was a little surprised myself. I mean, obviously the Obama camp had tried to spin it that he's a great debater, et cetera. Don't expect too much, but it turned out he was a pretty good debater. And I switched back and forth between CNN and Fox, both of which have their slanted views sometimes, and Every single one of the experts on those shows basically gave the decision to Romney, and then the various polls which they had taken also gave the decision to Romney. Not that people are necessarily going to vote for him, but they felt that he was the winner in the debate. I tended to agree with that, but I think both of them accommodated themselves well in terms of explaining their positions.
Let me get you in on the conversation, Mark Nevins. And I was asking about whether the public won last night. And by that, I mean, did they learn something about these candidates? Did they see that these candidates were offering different, if not visions, certainly different policies?
I think to the extent that the debate provided a lot of specifics, it was a very, as you said, it was a very wonky debate, very policy-driven debate. To that extent, yes, I think the public was a winner, although to the extent that the public likes to see a little bit of hand-to-hand combat, right. I think maybe they didn't get the most entertaining debate that they've ever witnessed.
Well, and Mike Castle talked about going back between CNN and Fox. I was doing the same, and I threw in MSNBC, and I have to say, Mark, when the debate was over, MSNBC was just excoriating the president.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're going to hear a lot of hand-wringing from Democrats over the president's performance. You're going to hear a lot of cheering from Republicans about the Romney performance. And certainly, Governor Romney delivered a very strong performance last night. But there's more than just the moment of the debate. There's also the debate after the debates. And the next 48 hours, I think, will tell us a lot about whether the momentum that Governor Romney generated last night continues or whether it peters out.
Well, and Mike Castle, both candidates are now back on the trail, trying to win over those swing states, some of the very specific counties within those swing states. What do you think Governor Romney can do to, in a sense, trade on the successes that he had last night?
Well, I think he has to obviously continue this. We have the vice presidential debate and then two more debates, and he has to continue to do well. I do believe he was better prepared than was the president. I think it's natural that if you are, not the office holder, if you are the non-incumbent and you're trying to succeed him, that you would do that. And I think that Obama was caught a little bit off guard. I don't think his preparation was quite as great, and it probably would be greater for the next two debates. So I think Romney needs to make sure that his advertising is well tuned, and of course, his advertising has become a problem. And Mark knows more about this than I do, probably. But I mean, you've got all these super PACs out there, and they, theoretically, and I assume in reality, are not allowed to talk to the campaigns, and they're liable to say anything. But I think that the Romney advertising needs to be as positive as possible in terms of what he would do. They need to sell him as an individual. I think his best ads have been ones where he looks at the camera and talks, to a degree. And I think he needs to do more of that. The focus is going to be on those seven or eight states that everyone thinks are battleground states, primarily, obviously, Florida and Ohio and Virginia several states like that. And so far, Obama seems to be doing better than Romney in those states. And maybe he made some gains last night. Although, if you look at the so-called undecideds, it's a very low percentage at this point. And some of these states are already voting, as a matter of fact.
Indeed.
With the early voting that goes on. So, he's got his work cut out for him, obviously. But I think good, clear advertising and maybe trying to stay away from the negatives a little bit and come in with a positive message. I think he's a positive person. I think he'd be a very good president if he were to get there, but I would like to see the campaign exude that positive outlook.
And Mark, what do you think President Obama needs to do if he didn't do as well as Governor Romney last night? He's now out on the trail. You've been a media and communications consultant. What would you consult? How would you consult?
I think that there were some opportunities he missed last night that I think he needs to take advantage of now. I don't think he challenged Governor Romney aggressively enough on his claim that his tax cut will be revenue neutral.
This is this $5 trillion number that was thrown around.
This $5 trillion number, right? To say that the $5 trillion is paid for, but then not explaining how you pay for it is a little disingenuous, and I think the president's going to have to be aggressive on that point. I think the president also is going to have to fight back more aggressively on this $716 billion from Medicare attack from Governor Romney, which has been fact-checked over and over and over again and disproven over and over and over again. And the president, I think, didn't fight back on that as aggressively as perhaps he could have last night. I think he's going to have to go through the debate tape, figure out where he missed his opportunities, and then go spend the next 48 hours delivering those points in Ohio and Florida and Colorado and all the battleground states that are in play right now.
Do you think the president, though, missed an opportunity when that tape came from that $50,000 a plate dinner where Romney was talking to a lot of supporters and talked about this 47% of the population that did not come up last night? Do you think the president should have brought it up?
You know, whether or not the president should have raised the issue, I think you could debate. Probably his handlers would submit that the tape itself is more effective than anything the president could say about it. However, strategically, when you're delivering a campaign message, you want to deliver that message consistently across multiple channels. So if you're going to deliver that message in your TV ads and you're going to deliver it on the campaign trail, well, you should deliver it in the debate as well.
What do you think, Mike Castle?
Well, on that particular question, I did not like that comment, by Romney from a political point of view. I think it hurts him to a degree. And, I would think that the Democrats would be pushing that fairly hard at this point. It's not quite up there with the Todd Akin comment on legitimate rape, which I thought was a ridiculous comment.
Very few things are.
That isn't kind of a league by itself. But I'm sorry, go ahead, Mike Castle.
And somebody else said it altogether, and a lot of people dismissed him. But the bottom line is that comment is harmful to a degree. I believe on the other side that I think people are getting a little tired of Obama blaming everything that has been negative in this climate in terms of spending and jobs and the economy. On the previous administration. I mean, he's been there for 4 years. Clearly, deficits have not been reduced during that 4 years. He's just simply not carried out what he said he would do. And he constantly says, I inherited this. I'm doing the best I can. Here's what I'm going to do in the next 4 years. I think he's a person of goodwill, but I think the facts don't support, what he said he would do. And candidly, I don't think he's worked particularly well with either Republicans or Democrats. All that focus for almost a couple of years on his health care legislation, I think, took away the most important matter to this country, and that is the success of how people are doing individually out there. And that's a matter of concern. I think that's what Obama has to push hard on. There's some real fallacies in terms of Obama's positions.
We have to take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation with former Republican Congressman from Delaware, Mike Castle, and Mark Nevins, a communications consultant for the Democrats. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the fully inclusive Waldorf Kindergarten offers full and half-day programs in a socially and emotionally rich environment where children learn through play in a holistic and nurturing setting. Learning is accomplished through puppet shows, seasonal celebrations, art, music, storytelling, and an abundance of outdoor activities and play. Hosting an open house at Camp Hill Special School's Chester County campus on October 6th. Details at camphillkindergarten.org.
I'm Mike and Scott. Listener support is vital to WHYY, and we'll be asking for yours during our upcoming membership campaign. But the October buyback is your chance to help give us a head start. Make a pledge during our October buyback, and for every 750 donations we receive, you'll buy back one day. This means one less day of pledge and one more day of news without membership breaks. Do your part at whyy.org/support. Thank you.
Supporting WHYY, Beaumont at Bryn Mawr, a retirement community owned and governed by residents for residents, presents a panel discussion, Retirement Decisions, Myth and Fact, on Saturday, October 20th. The panel, led by Juliette Goodfriend, founder and president of the Bryn Mawr Film Institute, will explore retirement lifestyles and second acts, as well as real estate and financial realities. Open to the public October 20th. Event registration and information at BeaumontRetirement.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. We are deconstructing last night's presidential debate, the first of three presidential debates this October between President Obama and Governor Romney, and talking with Mark Nevins. He's a Philadelphia-based media and communications consultant. In fact, served as the Pennsylvania Communications Director for the Hillary Clinton for President campaign. Also with us is a former Republican Congressman from Delaware, Mike Castle. He's now a partner with DLA Piper. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Mark, let me go back to you. And actually, there's been a lot of fact-checking going on. I have in my hands some fact-checking from the New York Times. NPR did some fact-checking. So have some of the other groups as well. And it seems that a number of things that Governor Romney said really don't bear up under analysis. One of them, he said that he had no intention of cutting taxes on the rich or enacting a tax cut that would increase the deficit. That's quoting from the New York Times, an editorial today. Looking at the debates and looking at how both of the candidates proposed their policies, is it important that they stand up under some kind of scrutiny?
Well, sure. And one of the great things, I think, over the last 5 to 10 years has been the explosion of fact-checking sites on the internet, in the newspaper. I think the public needs somebody to referee this stuff and call fouls when they see them, especially with the explosion of independent expenditure advertisements, the super PACs, the 527 groups.
That have so much money.
And they can say what they want almost with impunity, and to have an impartial referee, I think, is very important. And so, yes, I do think that it is important for a candidate, especially a presidential candidate, in a presidential debate, to be able to defend what they say. And I think Governor Romney has historically had a problem with trying to be a little bit too fine in describing or defining what it is he is, what he wants to do, and what he has done, from one extreme of flip-flopping his position on things like abortion, but also in trying to have it both ways. He wants to get credit for cutting taxes, and yet he's denying that he's cutting taxes. So I think, again, that goes to this debate after the debates, which we're going to see over the next 48 hours. Governor Romney is going to have to defend some of the things he said last night, and I think it's going to be challenging for him.
And Mike Castle, even just picking up on that, is it possible to reduce the deficit, which certainly Governor Romney, President Obama, others have said that's an important thing to do. Can you reduce the deficit and cut taxes at the same time and also increase military spending?
Well, you probably can't do all that unless you do a few other things as well. Let me just say one thing, Marty. I couldn't agree with Mark more. I think this explosion of fact-checking, as he has said, is very, very important in these debate formats, because it, I think, first of all, keeps the candidates more honest than they might be otherwise, and secondly, it does point out some of the fallibilities of the various positions which they have taken, and it works both ways. I mean, you know, for instance, Obama indicating he has a specific $4 trillion deficit reduction plan is a bit of an exaggeration. He says they're cutting $2.50 for every dollar in additional revenue. Well, he's already counting in that deficit reduction that was done by Republicans in Congress and by him over the last couple of years. He's counting war savings, which are going to be in place anyhow, and some other things along those lines. So I think he's a little bit off base there too. They both can explain to a degree, sometimes without explicity, as Mark's indicated, you know, exactly what they are doing, and sometimes I think it is insufficient. And so, as a result, I think the fact checking is something that is part of the debate after the debate, and this was an interesting debate in that I don't think there are any one liners or anything that are going to come out of it. Sometimes that pops up later, but it doesn't seem to me that you have any there you go again type statements, as Reagan did or whatever. So it's going to get down to where people are with respect, you know, to the facts on all these things. And, you know, there are going to be some questions, and I think these are legitimate questions that these candidates are still going to have to answer.
But it seems to me, and then we'll get to our callers, Mark, that there are true philosophical differences between these two candidates. And President Obama believes in that the government spending can help the economy, can help the middle class, can deal with infrastructure, all of that. Governor Romney believes that if government gets out of the way, business can hire people and put people back to work and thereby improve the economy. Those are two very different views of government.
Sure. And I think that's you've gotten to the fundamental difference between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats believe that there is a role for government to play, a positive role for government to play, and Republicans believe that government just gets in the way and mucks up the work. So I think voters need to decide which perspective makes more sense for them, which approach makes more sense in our current environment, and decide. That's going to be, I think, part of the calculation they make.
And let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. If you watched or listened to last night's debate, the first presidential debate, we want your analysis, your critique, your response. Let me see what Robert from Skipack has to say. And Robert, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's kind of a general question. They talk about what Obama has not accomplished in his first 4 years, but they never lay the blame at the doorstep of the do-nothing Congress. I'm wondering why that isn't brought up in the debates, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Well, Robert, thanks for the call to Radio Times, and Mike Castle, as someone who served in the U.S. Congress, you want to take that?
Yeah, as somebody who's part of that do-nothing Congress kind of time. First of all, I don't think Robert is all wrong in that statement, and I think particularly in the last couple of years, there's been a real stalemate as far as Congress is concerned. Of course, when Obama took over, he had a Democratic, you know, Congress, and you know, moved forward in that way. But I believe, and I don't mean to pass the blame on because I'm not exonerating Congress from all this at all, but I do believe that the President of the United States has the responsibility to sit down with the leadership of both parties. And actually, Romney said this last night about his ability to govern in Massachusetts, which he did effectively with an 85% Democratic General Assembly up there. And I think the president needs to sit down with the leadership. He's the one person who can do that. He needs to go to the media and explain what he is doing, and he needs to do everything he can to curry the favor of those people. And he did this clearly with the Democrats on health care, but he was not doing it and simply didn't even try to run with his own commission, the Simpson-Bowles Commission, with respect to dealing with the deficit, and he got very little else accomplished. I think a lot of it was the failure to sit down and to work with the Congress, to manipulate the members of Congress in a positive way. And I think it can be done, and I believe that that's where Reagan deserves a lot of credit. I think it's where Clinton deserved a lot of credit. And I was there for a couple of years, and I just didn't see that. And that went both ways. It wasn't just Republicans. I didn't see a good relationship with Obama and his secretaries and other people in the administration with the Congress in general. So I would hope that he, as a second-term president, or Romney as a first-term president, will work much harder in terms of the Congress, regardless of who's going to be in charge of the House or Senate. And again, I'm not exonerating Congress. I think Republicans were too adamant in terms of some of their positions. The whole idea that a few tax increases might get you a lot of cuts actually makes some sense, and should not have been rejected by Congress. But that is the missing part in American government and politics today, is the ability of Congress and the president to get together. And both parties, to a degree, share some fault with respect to that. The media does, too, to a degree, to be honest about it, Marty, because of the instant ability to go on the air and attack the other side, if they say something that you can claim cuts Medicare or whatever it may be. And as a result, everybody is pointing fingers at each other. Obama back to the Bush operation, and Republicans and Democrats in Congress to each other and to the president. It's just not the way to move forward. I had the pleasure of being a governor for 8 years, and I can tell you that working with our Democratic state Senate was very important to me, and we did it constantly to better our state. Many governors have done that, and Ed Rendell did that clearly in Pennsylvania, and I just think there needs to be much more of that and much less of the trying to blame the other side or what's happened in the past.
Well, let me get you in, Mark Nevins, on that. I mean, do you think, as Mike Castle seems to think, that the president did not do enough to reach across the aisle? He certainly talked about that. I think he was rebuffed by a lot of Republicans, but nonetheless, this is politics.
There is a legitimate question to be asked: who's to blame for the lack of collaboration, the lack of coordination between the executive office and the legislative branch? When the president took office, Republican leadership in Congress said that their number one priority was to make sure he didn't get reelected. And when you make that your public statement when someone takes office, it sort of sets up a adversarial relationship, to say the least. And I think Congressman Castle is right in that, at the state level, there are great examples of governors and legislatures from different parties working together to get things done. However, I think it's,
seems different in Congress.
Well, it's convenient. Washington. It's convenient for Governor Romney to say, "Well, I did it in Massachusetts, so why can't he do it in Washington?" And I think Congressman Castle can probably talk about this far more effectively than I can. The atmosphere in Washington is far more acrimonious, far more poisonous than in any state capital, and that has gotten worse, and it's only going to continue to get worse. And I think partly to blame is the media, as Congressman Castle said, but the internet now, because news and reporting and information is provided instantaneously across multiple channels, people are very sensitive about how things are perceived. So every instant, every piece of legislation, every vote is subject to partisan scrutiny.
And that's Mark Nevins. He's a Philadelphia-based media and communications consultant, has worked with the Democratic candidates and also the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Mike Castle, former Republican congressman from Delaware, joining us by telephone. In fact, I think has held just about every elective office in Delaware. And we are talking about last night's presidential debate, the first of three this month. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We have Brian from Center City, Philadelphia, joining us. And Brian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. I think it was very telling when President Obama said to Jim Lehrer, "Let's move on." I think it speaks to basically the media's, they've dropped the ball on what it means to be an active participant in our system. There's how many press conferences has the president had, and when is there ever a follow-up or a second follow-up if the question's not answered? Last night it was evident that the president was perturbed that he actually had to answer questions. And I think it goes to our system that we do not require the people in power to actually be forced to sit there and answer a follow-up before they move on to a second question.
Brian, I think it's interesting and a fair analysis looking at both the format last night and the role that the moderator played. And Mike Castle, do you have thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, I believe that the Brian is right, and I do think the media should have more access and should be able to do more follow up and ask tougher questions of a president. And I think this morning when President Obama woke up, he probably felt the same way, because it appears that Romney was well honed because of the debates he went through, and that President Obama had been unchallenged all that time and wasn't quite as sharp as he probably would have liked to have been. So I think he's correct about that. The "let's move on" comment, I think, is probably something he regrets to a degree. I also, by the way, couldn't agree more with something that Mark said with respect to the atmosphere in Washington being acrimonious, and then mentioning the internet also. I mean, the internet, in that I'm including websites and blogs and those kinds of things, it's just filled, you know, with the very vitriolic statements by people who are very biased one way or another. And you find that the people who watch Fox News tend to follow those bloggers who agree with them, the talk show radio and TV people who agree with them, be it either Fox News or MSNBC, depending on your preference. And it's dividing this country more and more, and I tend to agree with him. It's going to get more acrimonious, not less so in Washington, D.C. You're going to have a very close Senate. You're going to have a House that will probably be, you know, marginally Republican. We don't know for sure who the president's going to be right now, and I don't see any of this is going to be easy. And it is frankly, easier in a state than it is at the federal government level. But I would hope that all of us in this country, from the top of the media chart, be it the New York Times or whatever, through everybody who's going to their computer, can be, you know, considerate of each other in terms of making sure the country advances, not just their ideological interests.
Brian, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And you, Mark Nevins, picking up on what Brian said, it sounds like he's faulting perhaps Jim Lehrer, perhaps the media in general, for not asking tough questions, for not doing follow-up. But even looking at last night's debate, it seemed that because of the sort of loose format, it allowed either Obama or Romney to take charge. And it looks like Romney did a better job than that than the president did.
Sure. You know, and in defense of Jim Lehrer, you know, I've never moderated a presidential debate. I'm pretty sure I never will. But it's got to be one of the hardest jobs. You've got two very forceful personalities up on stage with a lot to say. They don't really care what you want them to say. They want to say what they want to say.
You're kind of a gnat, are you not? Buzzing around.
And trying to corral them is very challenging. I guess it raises the point, and I read this in someone's analysis, and I don't remember who it was, so I can't credit them appropriately, but it raised the question, why have any format at all? Why not just have a moderator, a smart moderator like Jim Lehrer, get out there and say, let's start talking. Let the two candidates talk about, you know, introduce a topic, and then let the moderator just serve as kind of a sheepdog, kind of herding them back into the center of the ring so that they continue to talk about relevant issues. But let it be a free-ranging conversation for 90 minutes, because effectively, that's what it ended up being last night.
Well, I was going to say that's kind of what we saw or what we heard last night. And I guess, you know, the question is whether the public was served, and I think we shouldn't lose sight of that particular question.
Sure.
Let's take another very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We have a full bank of calls here. Clearly, people want to talk about last night's debate. The fact-checkers are checking the facts. The spinners are clearly spinning, and the candidates are back on the campaign trail after last night's presidential debate in Denver, Colorado. There will be a vice presidential debate in 1 week next Thursday night. Talking with Mark Nevins. He's a Philadelphia-based media and communications consultant. Worked here in Pennsylvania as communications director for the Hillary Clinton for President campaign. Also a communications director for the Kerry Edwards campaign in Pennsylvania, and also has worked as a communications strategist for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. And on the telephone now, Mike Castle, former Republican congressman from Delaware. In fact, has served as lieutenant governor, deputy attorney general, and state senator in Delaware. He's currently partner with DLA Piper. We'll take some more calls after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
AT&T Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, This Is the Week That Is, the election special. Written and performed by Philadelphia's own Jennifer Childs and the This Is the Week That Is ensemble, 1812's annual political satire features a script that changes with the headlines and up-to-the-minute reporting on all the news that's fit to skewer. Tickets available at 215-592-9560 or at 1812productions.org.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. So let the debate over the first presidential debate begin. We'll have reaction. Also, challenges at American Airlines. It's bankrupt, it's got union issues, and now you can add reports of loose seats on aircraft. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
So
Supporting WHYY, Friends School Haverford is a coeducational Quaker school for preschool through 8th grade, located in Haverford, Pennsylvania, minutes from the Blue Route and 76. Friends School Haverford offers rigorous academics and a commitment to help meet the needs of each child in subjects including a math program that can take capable students through calculus. A micro farm, middle school travel, and study adventures, and more, are a few of the hallmarks of their program. Now accepting applications for the 2012-2013 school year. Details at friendshaverford.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We are talking about last night's presidential debate and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Rich from Orland to join us on Radio Times. And Rich, go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have Rich? Let's go to Tom. We have Tom from Newcastle, Delaware. And Tom, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Hi there. Great show, Marty.
Thank you very much.
I'm quickly going to just say this. The fact of the matter is that the overwhelming majority of the people in this country have made up their mind. Less than 5% really are the ones that would be called undecided at this point.
Yes.
And I think, in my opinion, last night, both candidates were out to win this undecided voters. So the reason why I think President Obama did not bring up the 47% issue was because he didn't want to be seen like he's a desperate president out there just trying to throw in anything in there. I think he was waiting for an opportunity to be brought up by either Mr. Romney or the moderator so that he could, talk something about it. At the same time, I think majority of the undecided at this point, they're not really out there to see who wins the debate as far as who looks better than the other. But as a matter of fact, who has the better options going forward, especially when it comes to fact-checking. I think this group of people that we call undecided, they would probably be weighing in on those facts before they decide either way, one way or the other, how they're going to vote.
Well, Tom,
you're
welcome. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Mark Nevins, even going back to you, he seemed to indicate that he didn't think that the president was being aggressive enough, but maybe concerned that the president was either waiting for an opportunity or wanted to look presidential, something that you had mentioned to me before the show began.
Yeah, I do think that, based on what I know from my conversations with the Obama campaign and just in general, I think that the approach they wanted to take was to have the president be presidential. You know, one of the great advantages of being the president in one of these debates is the stature of the office and engaging in sort of a toe-to-toe food fight with the challenger, with Governor Romney, sort of erases that advantage. But there's a very fine line between being presidential and being a little standoffish. And I think that probably in many cases, I guess critics would probably say in all cases, he was on the wrong side of that line. But he did, I think, to the extent that he wanted to avoid, you know, getting down in the mud and trading punches with Governor Romney, he was successful. But I probably think that if he could go back and have a couple of moments back, he'd take them.
Mike Castle, going back to some of the things that Governor Romney said, I'm looking at something that Jim Tankersley wrote in National Journal. He writes, apparently Mitt Romney likes government regulations, loves Medicare the way it is, agrees fairly regularly with President Obama, and does not, in fact, want to cut taxes very much. Do you think that Governor Romney was pivoting last night away from the more conservative members of your party and trying to appeal to moderates, those undecideds or those in the middle?
Well, several points. First of all, I don't know about, you know, less than 5% being undecided. I would tell you that there's another 10 to 15 or some percentage, I don't know what it is, that could switch their votes from one to the other. Even now, I mean, just because you're decided now doesn't mean you're not in a position where you might change your mind in the next 3 weeks or so. So I think it's a little more open than people realize. And with respect, to your
about moderates, conservatives within your party.
Your point, I think he's trying probably a little bit to do that. I tend to be more moderate myself, so I would, there are things that the Republican Party says that I frankly don't agree with. I probably wouldn't have voted for the platform that the Republican Party adopted. But, I think he's doing a little of that, but he's... Mm. I'm convinced he's a pretty good man. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to win, and I'm not suggesting Obama's not a good person, but I think that Governor Romney is a very bright guy. He's had some interesting experiences in his life in terms of background. I think he's very qualified to do this, and I think he basically is where he is. And sure, he may be different today than he was 15 years ago on some issues, and one can call it a flip-flop, if you will, or you can call it an evolution in terms of where he is. But I don't think he's really the kind of person who is, as some say he is doing, is going to say anything to get elected. He seems to have some fairly, strong positions on some of these areas that have been consistent. He probably is concerned about appealing more to the middle now, so he will slant things in that direction where he can. Having said that, I don't think you're going to see a lot of, total revisions of his positions as a result of trying to appeal to the voting populace.
Mark, let me go back to you, then we'll get back to our callers. And I thought it was interesting that the president did not bring up, for instance, the DREAM Act, knowing, of course, how important the Hispanic vote is for him. There were no sort of references to women generically, whether talking about health care or the Lilly Ledbetter Act, for instance. And even in health care, it seemed to me, again, there were these opportunities where the president could have promoted things that seemed to be popular with the public, generally speaking. He didn't go there.
The format of the debate was such that I suppose if he had wanted to take it in that direction, he had the ability to do so, although, the focus was specifically on jobs.
Yes.
And the economy. Although I do think that just naturally the way the candidates talk about issues, I watched the debate mostly on CNN and flipped around a little bit, but CNN had those dial groups and you could watch the reactions of men and women. And when the president would talk about his plans for health care, the line for women went very high, and the men would stay sort of down in the middle. And then when Governor Romney talked about his health care plans, the lines reversed and the men went very high. And I just think there's a natural gender gap between the two candidates.
You don't have to say the words, per se.
Yeah, on every issue, I think that happens.
Let me get, it looks like Paul from Reading to join our conversation. And Paul, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I feel that the American voter needs to pay very, very close attention to when President Obama says, I need another 4 years to accomplish the things I want to. He made a great many promises 4 years ago and has yet to come through with them. To give him another 4 years of the same thing, I think, is a mistake. Mr. Romney, on the other hand, has a proven track record as a governor. He has a proven track record as a businessman, whether you like his personal wealth or not, that's irrelevant. He has a track record of success. What we put into the White House 4 years ago is a junior senator who rallied the people with a phrase called change, and that's how he got into office and has yet to put forth what he promised. That's my comment.
Okay.
I thank you very much for taking my call.
You're very welcome, Paul. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let me toss that back to you, Mark Nevins, if I could, only because what Paul believes is that Obama has not fulfilled any of the promises that he made 4 years ago. True, not true?
Well, I think that's a difficult claim to defend because he said he would reform health care, and he did. Whether you like the American, I can't remember the name of it, I have to call it
Obamacare.
Affordable Care Act. Whether you like it or not, he said he would do it, and he did it, and nobody else had been able to get that passed in the last 20 years. He said he would get Bin Laden, and he did. He said he would save the auto industry, and he did. So you may pick and choose some things that he didn't accomplish yet, and you would be correct in asking him to defend that. But I think that, in addition, he inherited an environment that was as bad as anything had been in the last 70 years, not since President Franklin Roosevelt had anybody inherited an economy this bad. So the comparisons between, you know, what the president has done and what previous recent administrations have done are a little bit mm-hmm. difficult to make. They're a little apples to oranges.
And Mike Castle, picking up on Paul's second point, do you think Governor Romney can run on his or should run more on his track record as governor of Massachusetts and even his time at Bain?
Well, not only that, but his time straightening out the Winter Olympics, too. I've talked to a person in Delaware who worked under him there. He said he was a miracle worker. He said he just did a great job of straightening out that problem. So he has a track record in a variety of ways of being very successful, and I think he should run on that. I thought that was one of the highlights of the Republican convention when people who had worked with him talked about that experience. It showed more, humanized him, and showed his abilities to a great degree. I do not think that President Obama really had a very successful first term. Yes, he did get bin Laden. He didn't do it, but I mean, the military did, and his people helped get that coordinated, and I think he deserves credit for that. Obviously, Obamacare, and by the way, I thought that was a very smart move by President Obama last night when he said he actually likes the expression Obamacare. It's been right. used as sort of a negative slant, and he sort of said, fine, you know, but, you know, the Affordable Health Care Act or Obamacare, you know, he got it done. But, you know, it's a mishmash to a degree. I mean, it was Nancy Pelosi who said, let's pass this thing and then figure out what's in it. And that, frankly, was written more in the House of Representatives than it was in the White House or even the Senate. And I think there's some very dubious aspects of it, which I assume he would straighten out. As would Romney if he were elected, and as would the Congress. But I'm not sure that's something for which he can receive a great deal of credit. He clearly has had trouble dealing with the deficit problems. You know, one of my great concerns is the fact, as I mentioned earlier, that he didn't, you know, take Simpson-Bowles and run with it. Maybe not the precise language of it, but the concept of some of the things which were in that, and do more with it. Obviously, Congress rejected it as well, mm-hmm. but I think his salesmanship could have been, you know, very important in that particular area. So I think that Paul makes some valid points. Obviously, you know, those on the other side are going to argue that, you know, he was successful this way, that way, or whatever. But the bottom line is, look in the mirror. I mean, you know, are you employed? You know, are you satisfied with your health care? You know, are there, you know, do you have student loan issues or whatever it may be? These things really haven't been wrestled with sufficiently, and I that's my concern with with his 4-year term and the promise that he needs another 4 years. I think he could have done more in the first 4 years.
Let me get to Tina from Chad's Ford to join us on Radio Times. And Tina, go ahead. You're on the air.
I don't think Romney won at all. I think he was a bully chameleon who just shined more light on the plutocratic autocracy that's trampling and cannibalizing our autonomic democracy. That's all. He talked over the rules on time, talked over the moderator, president-alike, stood his own platform on his head to introduce wonky spin that no one else even knows what he was trying to say.
Well, Tina, let me take your comment and actually toss it to Mark Nevins. And, I mean, clearly Mitt Romney decided to use the format to his own advantage. Tina, I think, was not pleased by what he did. What are your thoughts, Mark?
You know, there's something to be said for having participated in a rigorous Republican primary. I don't know how many debates they had. I lost track. They had dozens. They had dozens of debates that in the Republican primary. And there's something to be said for being in practice, for having honed your skills and be ready to participate in that sort of thing. The president hasn't done a debate, participated in a debate like that in 4 years. And I think your skills as in that environment get a little rusty. You can look at the 1984 debate between Ronald Reagan and Walter Mondale. Ronald Reagan lost that first debate, and it took him a little while to get back on his feet. I think George Bush lost the first debate between himself and John Kerry in 2004. So it's not uncommon for an incumbent to lose that first debate and have to you know, take a punch and then figure out how to get back on their feet and fight back.
We only have about a minute and a half before we have to say goodbye, but just picking up on that, Mark, then what would you then advise the president to do in preparation for the next debate?
I think he needs to continue to deliver his specific agenda, but I think he needs to challenge Governor Romney more on his lack of specificity and challenge him on some of the flip-flops and some of the obfuscation that he tries to engage in, where he tries to have it both ways. He's for tax breaks. He's not for tax breaks. He's going to cut taxes for the wealthy. He's not going to cut taxes for the wealthy. And I think he needs to make Romney be a lot more specific than he's been.
And to you, Mike Castle, what would you then advise Governor Romney to do for the next debate?
Well, I tend to agree. I think he should be specific. I think he needs to continue to prepare. He just seemed better prepared. A lot of this is attitudinal. I mean, it just appeared that Romney was more comfortable in the debate format. I think it's one of the reasons that he's been declared the winner by virtually everybody except Tina, who just called in.
Yes.
And and my sense is, you know, that was important. And I think he needs to be, you know, very prepared. But I think that Mark's also right. I think the specificity is important. If you're going to propose, you know, a program, you've got to be able to explain it, you know, from all sides. And that's a legitimate position the Democrats have raised. But he should continue to hammer on the Obama record over the last 4 years and go from there. And I would just say one other comment about...
Well, we have about 10 seconds, but go ahead very briefly.
About Tina, and that is Obama spoke for 4 minutes more than Romney did, according to the clock. So it's hard to say that, you know, he's at fault with respect to that. I think Obama's more at fault than Romney was in terms of running over time.
Or maybe even the moderator or the timekeeper or whatever. Mike Castle, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Mark Nevins, thank you for joining us
as well.
Thanks
for having me.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about this program. And I posted a question on our Facebook page earlier this morning about the debate. We want to know what you think. So go to the Radio Times Facebook page. Appreciate those phone calls to Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.